staying in touch with our hearts. I think where I have to start with this is with the word heart, because it has varied definitions by different Dharma teachers, and really the vast majority seem to assume that we know what it is that they're talking about. And I agree that we probably do pretty much know what heart means. And it is hard to define. I've spent a lot of time in the past week trying to define it. And most of what I've come up with, well, I'll pass on some of the ones that made the most sense to me, just so you'll know what I'm talking about. First, in the language that the Buddha spoke, which was one dialect before Pali, there was only one word for heart and mind, and that's citta. Last week I talked about bodhicitta, the enlightened heart and mind. And citta is located in the upper central part of the chest. Not here, not down here, but kind of right in the middle. And nowadays, we talk about heart and mind as if they're very distinct things. And the mind, one of my definitions, we approach it as the working space of our mental life. It's sort of like that part of your desk that's not totally cluttered, you know, where you get to actually get things done. And it consists of what enters into our consciousness, what the mind-heart is grabbing and bringing to our attention. Neuroscience has shown that only a small percentage of the brain's activity occurs as consciousness, and that this consciousness takes up huge amount of energy. You know, they say that most of the calories we burn are burned by our brains. And of that, most is burned by this consciousness, which is just a little bit of what the brain does. So in other words, it's not very efficient. It's the unconscious part of our mental activity that really gets the bulk of the work done. The brain will make a lot of decisions without consulting us, and it'll just kind of give us a rationale afterwards. And I've made this a big part of my daily life practice to notice when the unconscious part of my brain has made a decision and see if I can hear the excuse that it's giving me. It's kind of funny sometimes. And I notice that sometimes I do get a chance to either approve of the decision or contravene it, say, no, we're not doing that. Most beginners have their first big revelation when they see that thoughts just enter their minds, that they don't generate their thoughts. And it's a wonderful crack in the sense of self. When we realize this, we can see these thoughts arise and just let them go, like birds that are flying past us overhead. And we don't have to believe our thoughts. It's wonderfully liberating. You may remember back to when you really grasped that they're just thoughts. It's not the truth. It's not you. And it's also a great first step in getting in touch with our hearts. And by this, I'm talking about the current conventional meaning of heart, which is something different than mind. This difference is important, I think, because our culture so emphasizes intellectual activity. That part of the desk where we make our decisions and do our work, that's where we think it's all happening. And in fact, when many beginners go to talk about their emotions, they'll either use some analogy or they'll explain what has happened. And they cannot find anything to say about what they're physically feeling. So my definition, my premier definition of the heart is our body-based emotions, what we feel. But particularly, if we're going to call it the heart, it's what we feel deeply, not just the fleeting vedana of, I like it, I don't like it, it bores me. The stuff that is intense and lasts a while. The heart holds our enduring values, for better or for worse. The heart can be contracted by hatred, anger, envy, or fear, and a lot of other unpleasant feelings. Or the heart can be open with the Brahma Viharas, with generosity, friendliness, and personal love. This definition of the heart guides the decisions that are brought into consciousness for our adjudication. When the rest of the brain says, me, what do I think about this? It's the heart that determines our conduct. And thus, it's an aspect of karma. It has a role in the development of karma because the heart determines what thoughts and urges will come into consciousness in the future. If we intentionally go with a thought or an urge, it gets dug deeper into our being. And next time, the same kind of stuff is going to come up. So it leans us in a direction, and in doing so, defines us. So the heart can change, just like us, just like our minds, and we can guide it through change with our practice. So the great value of generosity practice or metta practice is to keep the heart open and not let it collapse into negativity so that our lives can get better and continue to get better. So first, we've got to get in touch with it. And that means we have to pay attention to our body in order to know what our heart really desires. So as practitioners, our task is to turn the attention away from those rationalizations about our decisions and feel our way through the decision, either in real time or afterwards. And if we do it in real time, it can make the decision-making process kind of slow. And anyone who works with me can vouch for this. Sometimes takes me a long time to make a decision. But it helps when we can think about our choices and recognize that what we think about them is not the same as what's in our hearts. Once we really get this, that our rationalizations are not the same as what's in our hearts, then we can really get in touch with our hearts. And it's good to understand that staying in touch with the heart helps it open and helps it heal from its history of negative dispositions. When we pay attention to our deepest feelings, we're basically loving ourselves, just as the Buddha recommended over and over in the suttas. But there's an irony about knowing the heart, because there is fear embedded deep inside it. And we need to understand this fear to stay in touch with the heart. What fear? The heavenly messengers. This is the truth about being embodied awareness, the inevitability of old age, sickness, and death. Take a moment and feel your body's emotional response to this inevitability. Old age, sickness, and death. It's the big downer of human life. But these heavenly messengers are not just going to happen. We also know they will, deep in our hearts. And most of us have decades of trying to forget it. Thus, the allegory, this beautiful story of Prince Gautama escaping from his father's pleasure palace into reality with the help of the charioteer. What were his feelings about seeing old, sick, and dead people? There's a term in Pali that has no real English equivalent, and that's samvega. Tenisro Bhikkhu defines this as a brew of powerful feelings, the oppressive sense of shock, dismay, and alienation that come with realizing the futility and meaninglessness of life as it's normally lived, a chastening sense of our own complacency and foolishness in having let ourselves live so blindly, and an anxious sense of urgency in trying to find a way out of this meaningless cycle. Almost everyone has that shock, dismay, and alienation at confronting the three heavenly messengers. And most people instantly retreat into denial or the self-soothing of sensual worldly pleasures. And that's what Buddha's father urged him to do instead of going forth into the holy life. But Buddha and all of you have the wisdom to see our tendency to retreat into blind complacency. And like the Buddha, we have glimpsed the fourth heavenly messenger. And that is someone living the holy life. We have glimpsed the potential of this path. And like Buddha, if we were in touch with our hearts, on recognizing what the holy life has to offer, we had a feeling in Pali, pasada, which is usually translated as clarity and supreme confidence. It's what has led us to do this thing that is so counterintuitive. Nothing for 30 or 45 minutes, but bring our attention to the body's experience, letting the mind settle down and become clear. When I urge you to stay in touch with your heart, and I do, very urgently, what I mean is seek out this feeling of pasada, cultivate it, make it the foundation of your heart. As you practice, keep looking at your own history and compare how things are now to how life was before you started your practice. See how it's gotten better. Because this will give you the confidence in the path. This will nurture pasada in your heart. Look in on your heart at least once a day, just the way family members come home at the end of the day to each other. All uncomfortable feelings are the spawn of clinging, the primeval turning away from what we think we don't like. Old age, sickness, and death. I have watched many people die, and I have observed that with love at hand, it's not so bad. But even more importantly, for most of our lives, living with a horror of old age, sickness, and death is entirely useless, and it's utterly harmful. It is dukkha with zero benefit. Please just take a moment and imagine life without this fear. Let me quote a couplet from the Chittivaga, the discussion of the mind and heart. Whatever harm an enemy may do to an enemy, or a hater to a hater, an ill-directed mind inflicts on oneself a greater harm. Neither mother, father, nor any other relative can do one greater good than one's own well-directed mind. So embrace pasada, the clarity and confidence that comes with life on this path, and face the samvega that lurks in your heart with the Dharma at your side. Stay in touch with your confidence in the practice and the clarity of the teachings. Keep on keeping on. Learn to know how your emotions feel in the body. Observe them as much as possible. Stay in touch with your heart. Follow the roots of each form of dukkha to its taproot. Watch as dukkha withers away and joy thrives from your wise and loving attention. As often as possible, bring that wise and loving attention to the heavenly messengers, all four of them. Don't forget the last one. And in so doing, you will heal your heart and liberate your mind. I'd like to end with a poem by Hafiz. Our hearts should do this more. I sit in the streets with the homeless, my clothes stained with the wine from the vineyards the saints tend. Light has painted all acts the same color. So I sit around and laugh all day with my friends. At night, if I feel a divine loneliness, I tear the doors off love's mansion and wrestle God onto the floor. He becomes so pleased with Hafiz and says, "Our hearts should do this more." Thank you.